Hey friends, thanks for listening. This is Kelly, and I'm coming to you today before this episode. This episode's going to be amazing. I'm talking to my friend, pelvic floor physical therapist, Amanda Nayfield. We actually spoke together on episode 14, which was like 2.5 years ago. So go way back if you want to get the intro to that. But now we're on episode 161, and it's unfreaking believable. I hit the top of the charts in Nigeria this past week under sexuality. So shout out to the entire continent of Africa and the very large country of Nigeria. And thank you so much for listening to me overseas. It means the most to me. In order for you guys to help me spread this podcast, I need two things. I need you to subscribe wherever you're listening. Subscribing helps, as well as liking it. Throw me some stars and a review would be awesome. I have not asked for this in like months and months and months. So if you haven't yet and you're new to me and you think this has been helpful, and I know it has to a lot of you because you send me DMs on Instagram. If you're not on Instagram and you want to be, I'm at Kelly Casperson MD on Instagram. I started my Instagram to like grow the podcast, and there's plenty of people on Instagram who like don't even know I have a podcast. So just so you know, there are people who are in different places on consuming things. Don't assume. Right. So thank you so much for leaving a review. Just a reminder for all of you healthcare people in America, if you want CME for listening to this podcast, it is available for you. So find your institution CME money and spend it on stuff you already consume. You learn so much in how to help women. So nurses, physical therapists, doctors, nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, whoever gets CME, I always put the link for the CME for the podcast down in the show notes. So it's there for you if you want it. And last but not least, if you're listening to this in June, awesome. If you're not, know that my book's coming out June 28th. It's going to be available on Amazon. For the first week, it's available for $2.99 for the ebook version. So I don't read ebooks, but I'm like, I think there's a lot of people who do, and it's going to be $2.99 for the first week. Otherwise, you can order paperback and hardcover if that is your drug of choice, reading books, which is my drug of choice is hardcover, and I totally blame my dad because that's what he passed on to me. It's a genetic problem. But June 28th is when the book You Are Not Broken, Stop Shooting All Over Your Sex Life comes out, which I am incredibly nervous and excited about. More nervous than excited on the average day, I have to tell you. But I'm getting some feedback to my awesome friends who are going to be reviewers for me. And so far, so good. They say it sounds like me, which I think is a good thing, and that the intro is really hitting home to them. So stay tuned. Later on in June, I'm going to read the intro for you guys on a podcast. So look for the book and also the private podcast experience. Private podcast group coaching experience is going to start in July. A lot of people have been asking for group coaching and things like that, and I just have not felt like I was ready to do that until now. So it is coming out in July. It's going to be offered first to the email list, and it's going to be small. I'm only going to have 300 people in it. Anybody who signs up in June is going to get a free copy of the book. Paperback, not even ebook. So look for that. The people on the email list are going to get the first dibs on it. It's going to have, the private membership is going to have videos on communication, anatomy, thought work, coaching, desire, secrets of magnificent sex, all of that stuff. I'll probably release a video once a month. We're going to do worksheets. We're going to do the live podcast recordings are going to be just for the private membership that's currently available to my email list. And then the online books of how to talk to your physician. So they'll listen, Vaginal Atrophy, my book. The best thing, I think the totally worth it thing is when I interview all these amazing people for the podcast, the private membership podcast people are going to be able to have a link to listen live and even type in questions. So like you get a front row seat to watch the live interview happen, and then you get all the content right when it's created on a private podcast link, so you don't even have to wait. Like for example, this podcast today with Amanda Nayfield, I interviewed her in April, May, June, which is actually pretty good for me doing that. So I interviewed her April 22nd, and it's being released in June. So private podcast people get the data content when it's being created. Those are just some of the reasons to join the private membership. Another reason is all the group coaching, because you know I'm a certified life coach, to talk about your low desire, your issues with body image, sexuality, how you were raised, what you want to do, putting you back in the driver's seat to get agency. It literally struck my brain like last month when I was talking with my sex therapists and counselors about the lack of available people in this country, and I would say worldwide, to help women with this. So this is not replacing your medical doctor. This is not replacing your sex therapist. This is basically like the reason so many people go see those people, because they just don't have sex ed and like understand their brain and how it works. And so this is to basically fill the need of the complete lack of resources in our country to help women and the people who love the women to help them live their best sex life. So come for the coaching, stay for the podcast interviews. It's going to be small. Only 300 people are going to, we're going to keep it small for a while. I don't know. Will I go up later? Maybe. Who knows? But for the time being, while we work out the kinks and add content to it, it's going to be a monthly membership and only open to 300 people. So I think that's it for today. I'm so happy you guys are here. I'm so happy this is international. I'm creating amazing things, have great interviews coming up. I hear from you guys all the time how because of the podcast or the Instagram, you went to your doctor, you got what you needed, you're having better sex. It just fills my heart and it's why I keep going. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this awesome podcast about physical therapy, putting things in your vagina, prolapse, bladder health, pelvic floor health through menopause, all the things I talk about with the amazing Amanda Nayfield. I love you guys so much, and I hope you enjoy. You are listening to You Are Not Broken, the only podcast that combines science, medicine, and psychology to re-educate your brain and help you live your best love life. And I'm your host, board-certified female urologist, Dr. Kelly Casperson. Hey friends, I'm so excited today because I have my good friend, Amanda Nayfield, pelvic floor physical therapist extraordinaire, who actually lives in town with me. Not that we see each other because we work and have kids and COVID, but we podcast occasionally. If you are on my podcast, I'll have to find the episode and put it in the show notes because it was like the beginning of the podcast. Mm-hmm. It was like, you were one of my intro. I'm way better at interviewing now.
You've come a long way.
I've come a very long way, but thanks for coming back.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
The biggest question that I need you to help people understand and tackle, I see this all the time, is a woman will come into my office. I'll just like create a story right now. She'll come into my office. It's been at least 6 months. It's usually been about 4 years since she's put something in her vagina. She's middle-aged, maybe perimenopause, but maybe postmenopause. And she's like, I just need to put something. She doesn't say it exactly like this, but the summary is, I just need to put something in my vagina for my marriage. And I'm like, okay, there's like 8 things wrong with this. And this is going to take a long time to undo. But I see it all the time. You know, they're coming to a doctor, like, just help me put something in my vagina. And I'm like, do you even want something in your vagina? And they're like, I don't know. Like they hadn't even thought about that part. But like, you need to go see a pelvic floor physical therapist because they help people put things in vaginas. So let's just riff on that problem because it's so incredibly common. What do you see? Do you see it presented differently than that?
No, I do see that a lot. And I think, like you said, it's multifactorial. There are a lot of things that go into that. It's not simply stretching tissue or getting something in there. There's, you know, the fear component, there's the emotional component, there's maybe some physical stuff happening if they are going through some like changes in their hormones. A lot of times what people say to me is, I haven't used it. And if you don't use it, you lose it. And so I think they have this fear that I haven't used it in so long, so it doesn't work anymore, or it's going to be painful. And so a lot of times from a PT perspective, we just break that down a little bit from the very beginning. Like, what are you afraid of? Like you said, do you actually want this? Are you doing this for your partner? Trying to understand what the intention is behind it, and then trying to break down that narrative that just because you haven't used it, you've lost it and it doesn't function anymore. Like that's not true. And it still does work. And we introduce things slowly so that your brain is, you know, if there's a fear component, the most important part is to introduce penetration that is not painful so that your brain really can rewire and say, okay, like this isn't dangerous. This isn't painful. It's okay. So a lot of times we'll start with that. And we'll do that in the clinic, either digitally as I palpate and exam. I might have them do it digitally. I might have them get a wand or a small dilator to start, but I'm very clear in that using dilators and wands is not about stretching tissue. It's about having a positive experience that your body can work around.
Yep. Yep. And do you see this too? Like, I see like, well, I just want the penis to go in my vagina. I don't actually want to put anything in my vagina. So like, they don't want to do any work to like get the big dumb animal in there. I'm like, that's a big dumb animal. Like, you've got to make sure things work well before I got in trouble. Like one, okay, this, I didn't really like, there's one comment on one YouTube video that I called the penis a big dumb animal. And then people called me a man hater or something. And so now I'm just, now I'm just embracing it. I'm like, we'll just call it a big dumb animal instead of penis. I really don't mean to offend, but like, it doesn't communicate well. It doesn't sense your needs very well. Like it's just somebody else's vaginal dilator. Right.
Totally.
But like, so anyways, before you go put that thing in that doesn't give great feedback, like do it yourself. Cause you've got the best feedback when you're learning about your body and what feels okay and things like that. And now I'm feeling shame because I don't want anybody to be offended that I like talk about things like this. But like, do you see that? Of like, yeah, yeah, but I don't want to put anything in my vagina.
Yeah. And I have the luxury of time and I see people weekly. And so we break that down too. Like, why don't you want to put something in your vagina? Have you ever explored your own anatomy? Have you ever masturbated? Have you ever done these things? And sometimes it's fear or shame or a lack of desire. I mean, that's like a huge thing, right? It's like, I actually just don't have any desire and I'm like doing this for my partner. And like, I think working that angle a little bit of like, I often refer to sex therapists or sex coaches. I encourage patients to read books, like Come As You Are is a good one. I know you've spoken about that a lot on your podcast.
Rekindling Desire by Barry McCarthy.
Yeah.
I try to plug that book whenever I can. It's so good. Especially good for like sexless marriages, which he defines, if he says that if you go like more than 6 months without having intimacy, pelvic intimacy, you pretty much need professional help because you've got so many communication issues now and like assuming they're thinking this stuff going on.
Totally.
It really helps with that. And there's a nice chunk in there for erectile dysfunction. So like male partner issues, which is common.
Yeah. Another book, I haven't actually read it, but I've heard good things about Mating in Captivity.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's a good book. Yeah.
It's so really good.
I often encourage people to like read those. You're not like, I don't think it's unusual for people in long-term monogamous relationships or aging women, or I don't think it's unusual to feel like you have a lack of desire. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you wouldn't enjoy sex.
Preach. People don't understand desire. They think desire is something that can, like, they should just like wake up because lightning struck them with desire, or they should purchase desire. And it's like, dopamine doesn't work like that. Like, I'm really curious lately about like the role of social media and ice cream, specifically ice cream, because I like ice cream. But like, if you get some solid dopamine doses outside of your sex,
mm-hmm.
your brain's like, man, mint chip Häagen-Dazs is so freaking easy. Like hooking up with somebody and communicating and like, you know, taking 20 minutes, like that's way more work than scrolling on Instagram, which is equally dopamine. We don't understand the role of like, if you can just get dopamine on the couch passively, your body and your brain's going to do it, right? Like this is what they're actually did studies. I just read these studies of like, there's way less sex happening now than like 3 decades ago because we're just so stinking busy. Like we're distracted and
yes.
we're filling our life with all of these things. It's like when sex was like one of 3 things to do in the evening, like it was way, way better, right?
And yeah, now like, what is it tonight? Yeah. Yeah. I feel like mostly when people come in with that, you know, I want to have sex, but I don't have desire and I'm a little bit afraid because I haven't done it in so long. I think that the majority of it is mostly like that mental, emotional, like psychosocial stuff happening. And then there might be some tissue changes. And that's where we work with you or another physician about maybe getting some estrogen on board or getting them checked out that way. As you know, if there has been hormonal changes, sometimes that does change the tissue and there can be some restrictions in tissue. And that tissue is meant to be very mobile. There's a lot of friction that happens there. So from a PT perspective, we can work on that too. All the way like at the entrance internally and even up at the clitoris, the clitoral hood can sometimes be a little bit less mobile, which can impair like sexual satisfaction. So we can work on all of that stuff from a physical standpoint also.
Do you have a favorite brand of dilators? Like say somebody is like go buy some dilators. Do you have recommendations?
I think we use Intimate Rose. I usually just direct them online. I know locally we have a store that sells some pretty good like silicone dilators. I definitely recommend like the softer silicone dilators.
As opposed to like the hard plastic ones.
Yeah, as opposed to the hard plastic ones. I mean, the hard plastic ones are significantly less expensive. So if that's a barrier, then I give options for that. But we usually use Intimate Rose, and I will send people directly to the website and have them buy like a set. And oftentimes, like, I mean, we have sets in the clinic and we'll show people and kind of decide where to start. There's like smaller sets and medium sets, and sometimes they just need to buy one or two as opposed to a whole set. And so we can explore that clinically, like before they go out and purchase a whole set.
Do you think it's relevant at all about like buying one around the range of what their partner's erect penis is? Is that relevant at all?
We progress to that. So it kind of depends. Like it's like if they're okay with it, I'll do a pelvic exam and we kind of just see like, do you have restricted tissue? Does it painful upon palpation? You know, like how much control do you have? Like, are you anticipating pain? Is your nervous system upregulated? If we do it and they're like, nope, that's all fine. Everything looks good. There's no pain. And it's like, look, you're like, everything's great. And then I think it builds confidence and it's like, let's look at our options here. And so if that's the case, then yeah, I might say like, let's start with one size smaller and then work up and see how that is. If you go there and they're like, oh, their nervous system kind of just gets all upregulated, they're nervous, they can't relax, there's some tissue restriction, there's pain, then I wouldn't start there, obviously. I'd be like, okay, like the goal here, like your brain is on guard, like your nervous system is on guard. And when that's like an automatic response that we have to like untrain kind of, right? Like we need to use those dilators as a positive experience, as a nervous system down regulator. So we're just going to start with something very small that's not painful.
Yeah. And the goal is not to put something in that's painful. The goal is to put something in that's not painful and be like, oh, this is safe. It's comfortable. I can do this. This is all right.
You're building confidence.
Yeah. You're building confidence. And then you go up from there.
Yeah, totally. So it kind of just depends on what you find clinically on the exam and what in their confidence level at the beginning. Sometimes it's amazing. Like people will come in, be like, I don't know. I haven't looked down there. I haven't felt down there. And then you do the exam and they're pleasantly surprised when they leave. They're like, oh, that was great. Like nothing hurt. Your muscles felt great. They were strong. You have good control. Like your tissue looks really healthy. You give them that information and they leave feeling like, okay, like I got this.
Yeah. That's awesome. How much of pain with intercourse do you see or think is because a woman's just not aroused and she just puts something in her vagina too soon? People who see you, right? Or women who are like pain with sex, but then like you do an exam and it's fine. And we know with pelvic arousal, you know, it increases blood flow. So the tissues are a little more resilient and the vagina lengthens and tips back, right? And so it's like, we're putting something in our vagina when the vagina hasn't been told it needs to prep for intercourse by our brain.
I would say like a lot of times if people are actually having pain, then I would say that certainly exacerbates it, but a lot of times there's other findings too. But when people have not had it in a while and they don't know and they're not sure if it's painful, we definitely have the discussion of like foreplay and arousal make a really, really big difference. And lubrication also. I can't tell you how many people are like, well, I never needed lubrication before. Like,
yeah, I'm literally like, I don't care. I'm also not 18. Like, yeah. I don't care how it used to be. Nobody's living their life how it used to be at this point.
Right.
Like it's not even relevant what you used to do. Like this is right. What you have to do now. And it's great.
Yeah. And even if you don't think, even if you feel like your body takes care of that, it's still not harmful. So it's, you know, it's like, I just encourage people to use like a good clean lubrication. And we talk about foreplay and arousal and prepping. And like,
the clitoris is not self-lubricating.
Right.
FYI to people. And the penis is also not self-lubricating.
Right. Friction is good and friction can be too much also. So a little help there.
It's like 80% of Americans use lube. And then like 80% of women say orgasm is easier when they use lube. I just remember 80% for all my lube stats. but it's like, come on people, join the club. It's okay.
Yeah.
I don't care how you did it when you were 24. Okay. Let's go. Any other thoughts on dilation or tips or tricks or like,
well, no, I guess the one thing that I often send people to you or to other physicians is I do think the estrogen component is a big thing. And there is a lot of fear, as you know, around that, like, and a lot of just misinformation and people not understanding, like sometimes people will have a patch or be doing some other form of hormonal therapy, but not having direct like a cream or a suppository. And so I think that that it's something that I educate on and that I say, talk to your doctor more about, because it's really not within my scope. I can't prescribe it, or I can say your tissue looks like it might need some assistance. But I think that there's a lot of fear and misinformation. And so I think in that population specifically, that's an important consideration.
Yeah, totally. And the 20 to 50, that's a broad stat, but 20 to 50% of people on systemic estrogen, it's still really low dose estrogen. It's not enough to get into the pelvic structures. Mm-hmm. So it's very common. There's nothing wrong with you if you want or need both. Because I've seen it both ways. I've seen people on systemic estrogen, they've got great vulvar tissue, really healthy. And then I've seen people on, everybody just needs different levels of it, right? Like, but we think about hormone replacement, like one size fits all. It's not how it works. As you ladies know, I'm obsessed with vulvar skincare to increase pleasure and decrease pain with intimacy and daily life in general. They have Reverie, which provides powerful hormone-free relief from vaginal dryness with an easy-to-use vaginal insert that renews your body's moisture for everyday comfort and intimacy. So give Bonafide a try today. No hormones and no prescription required. Free shipping, and to get 20% off your first purchase when you subscribe to any of their products, go to hellobonafide.com/notbroken and use the promo code Not Broken. That's hellobonafide.com/notbroken and code Not Broken for 20% off at checkout. Okay, so we got some questions from Instagram because I told them I was coming on with you. So let's do this. I can't seem to figure out how to do Kegels. I need suggestions. Also, what would be the best tool to buy?
So Kegels and pelvic floor contractions. So this is like an interesting thing because I feel like the perception of pelvic PT is like strengthen, 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 like Kegel, use your muscles. And what we don't understand is that, or what a lot of people don't understand is that pelvic floor muscles are postural muscles. Like they actually kind of work for us automatically as we move throughout the day. And we do want to have that conscious ability to contract, release, and lengthen, but we also want to tap into the automatic response that your body has. So a lot of times using your pelvic floor muscles when you can't find them, like if you feel like you have a really hard time accessing those muscles, there can be a few things going on. It could be that the muscles are maybe in a holding position. And so when you're trying to activate them or release them, they're just not moving very much. They might be overused for some reason. Sometimes it's just like we've sort of lost connection with that part of our body. That's not uncommon. I feel like sometimes, especially if people have had any kind of trauma or traumatic birth or anything like that, sometimes the brain just sort of like starts to ignore that part. And so we have to reestablish a good connection. And sometimes it just isn't working there. We have to look up and around the pelvis, what's happening there, and also maybe tap into some of that automatic use of the muscles. But if it's one of those things where like there's a lack of a connection, like your brain just really isn't, you're saying, you know, like squeeze and release, but there's not a lot happening or you can't feel it, there are some good tools that you can use out there. There's pretty basic biofeedback tools, and like Kegel is one and the LV is one, and they're smaller like biofeedback units that you can insert vaginally and you can squeeze and release around them, and you hook it up to a Bluetooth on your phone and you can kind of see the activation and the deactivation, and that can be helpful to just access the muscles. I kind of caution against it as like a strengthening tool necessarily, because a lot of times like pelvic floor dysfunction isn't about weakness. And so if people go, you know, like I'm going to just like do my Kegels 100 times a day and I'm just going to get super strong, like that might create more problems in the end. I like that. I like those tools for accessing and understanding how the muscles work. And also even just a vibrator, honestly, like anything that you can squeeze around and release, or if you have a different sensation like vibration, sometimes that just gets the brain to pay a little bit more attention to what's happening.
I love it. Okay, so resources for do-it-yourself pelvic floor therapy, how to find a good pelvic floor physical therapist, and what's the process like? That's like a whole podcast.
That is like a whole podcast. So I would say, I mean, I do-it-yourself physical therapy. I think if you're having some sort of symptom or pelvic floor dysfunction, you should be checked out by someone, because there can be so many different things. It's just not, incontinence can be 5 different things. It can be 10 different things. It's not everybody with incontinence doesn't have weak muscles, right? So there are a lot of different factors that go into that. So I think if you're having significant dysfunction, you should definitely see somebody. If you're looking for a physical therapist, the APTA and Herman and Wallace Pelvic Institute both have like a practitioner finder. So you can type in like where you live and it'll pop up. And I think like if people are on that, they've usually taken many courses through, they're on it because they know about it. They've taken courses. So, you know, you can find really good pelvic floor physical therapists that way. And luckily there are many of us now. I think that is a very, there's a growing field. There's a lot of pelvic floor physical therapists now. So that's a good way to find somebody. What was the last part of that question?
What's the process like?
Oh, so the process. I believe that pelvic floor dysfunction is a whole body issue. Like we have to look above and below and around the pelvis to really decide what's happening and what's driving incontinence or any kind of pelvic floor dysfunction. So when you go to see a therapist, usually I spend most of the first visit gaining a really thorough history. Like, when did this start? What were your bowel and bladder habits like as a child? What did it look like 15 years ago? When did you start noticing symptoms? Because it gives you a lot of information of like, I think in some people's mind, it's like it started 6 months ago. But then you start asking questions and you're like, oh no, this has been going on. It's been building up for years and years. And so gaining a really thorough history about when their symptoms started, what was happening around that time? Have they ever had any other injuries? Like, what activities exacerbate your symptoms? What makes it better? Like gaining a really, really good understanding, because that helps us get to what's driving whatever dysfunction you're having. So the first visit's a lot of talking and then a lot of education about your anatomy and what pelvic health is and what we're going to be looking at and why. So a lot of the first visit is talking. And then if everything feels good and everyone is on board, we will do a pelvic exam probably the second visit. And what we're doing there is we're palpating outside, looking at the outside tissue, making sure everything looks healthy, palpating the outside, palpating the inside muscles, connective tissue to make sure that there's symmetry and balance and good control and what's your strength and endurance. And that's giving us a baseline of what's happening. Depending on what we find, we now zoom out and I say, like, the pelvic floor does not just get dysfunctional on its own. It just doesn't decide that it's going to be dysfunctional. So you have to zoom out and say, like, what is around the pelvic floor? What is around the pelvis that might be contributing to this like muscle behavior? So then you might get an orthopedic screen. We might look at your back, your pelvis, your hip, even your abdomen. We are not hollow beings. And so there is a lot of stuff that can contribute to pelvic floor dysfunction. And it is our job to see what's happening and then zoom out and find out what else is contributing. So it's not unlike other PT in a lot of ways. A lot of times you're doing a lot of external orthopedic stuff, addressing the pelvic floor indirectly that way.
I see a lot of people come in, like their bladder starts leaking more after a knee replacement, a hip replacement, you know, a back surgery, something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot.
So what should I consider proactively pelvic floor wise as I've hit menopause?
So proactively, first of all, I think seeing a doctor about your hormones is probably a good place to start. It just depends, I guess. If you're not having dysfunction, that's great. I would still, if I think PTs are in a great position to do preventative care, educating about anatomy, educating about normal use of the muscles, how can you use them in a way with exercise and function to make sure that you're using them appropriately and keeping them active and keeping them healthy throughout your daily living rather than just like sitting and doing Kegels. So understanding that, but oftentimes when people come in with this, we do a lot of education about the normal function of muscles, about normal, healthy bowel and bladder habits. Like, you know, how can we identify if something is kind of starting to be off there and prevent that from happening? What do your muscles do during squatting, lifting, laying down, peeing, pooping? Like, do you have a good understanding of when things should be lengthened and relaxed and when they should be active?
No, it's good. Because the next question is best advice for a healthy pelvic floor. And I think that's what we're leading into. Like, my advice would be like, don't hold your pee and eat a lot of fiber. Get the poops out.
Get the poops out. That's a big one, the constipation, right? Yeah. And don't hold your pee. I think don't just in case pee a lot. I often have people like just in case peeing.
Oh, I have a lot of people who I pee, but then I push a little bit afterwards because I know a little bit more comes out. And I'm like, yeah, that's how it happens.
Everybody, like, yeah.
Everybody, our bladders don't empty 100%. There's always a little bit at the bottom of the funnel, but then some people will like discover that and then they think they don't empty all the way. And so then they'll pee and then they'll push at the end of peeing.
Yeah, that is not a, yeah, the just in case peeing, the pushing, a really big one. I just think that we are told so much to tighten our pelvic floors and keep it in and keep it strong and do your Kegels. And people like run around with their pelvic floor like tightened, right? Like they don't want to like leak. They're afraid of leaking. They're trying to get strong. They're trying to get tone, whatever it is. And that's actually not healthy. Like our pelvic floor is very dynamic. Like if you think about walking, squatting, running, like there's a lot of movement that happens in our pelvis, and those muscles need to be lengthening and moving with us. If we're like, if they're rigid and trying to like hold things up and in or maintain continence, even though that seems like it would help, it's actually not helpful and it can actually make it worse. So allowing your body to relax a little bit and letting your pelvic floor relax is an important concept to understand.
Awesome. Have you seen those new, they're called Innovo shorts. They look like bike shorts. They're like all over social media right now. They actually have some pretty like big names promoting it. Are those new Innovo shorts worth it if you seriously can't do a Kegel to save your life?
No. I would say no. Sorry.
They're expensive.
And you know, okay. So when I was younger, we had those like, it was like a brace that you put on and like, it would like contract your abs for you. It was supposed to give you a six pack. Remember those? Yeah. Did it work?
Yeah. Cause everybody has six packs abs now because they all did that back then.
Well, like it's not volitional, right? Like you need to have some volitional, you need to have an active participation in your training. Like I wish it was as easy. If it was that easy, like I wouldn't have a job. You wouldn't have a job probably. Right. So it's just not that easy.
We should Google what we should become now that they've come out with these Innovo shorts. Yeah. We're so screwed.
I just think of them as like the ab builder thing and like, no.
I love that. I hadn't thought of them like that before. They're expensive. That's my big thing is like buyer beware. They're expensive. Is it possible to get back to your pre-baby pelvic floor or will you always be different?
So that's like the messaging we get from our culture, right? Is that we should be the same as we were before we had kids. And that's not true in any sense. Physically, mentally, emotionally, in any part of our lives, we're not going to be the same. That doesn't mean that you can't feel comfortable and confident in your pelvic floor. And it doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to feel a lot different, but there's a lot of changes that go on in pregnancy and delivery. And I think if you're feeling like things are different or feeling like things are somewhat dysfunctional, getting help with that can certainly be helpful. But I don't think the idea that we should be the same as we were before babies is a realistic one.
That's so beautiful. Thank you for being on my podcast. Yeah. people need to hear that. Nobody likes where they are and they always want to be where they were, but they didn't like where they were when they were there. Uh-huh. Like our human brains, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you get the same, I think they're talking about pelvic floor PT. Can you get the same effect with yoga or Pilates?
I think with good awareness of your pelvic floor and the length, like we talked about the lengthening, like when you're doing a lot of yoga and Pilates, there's a lot of like, you know, wide leg positions, deep squatting. And if you have a good awareness of like, that's not when you're trying to tighten your pelvic floor. I think using those dynamic movements and tapping into that automatic use of your pelvic floor, like we talked about, can be super helpful. There's actually a whole course on like yoga for pelvic floor stuff through the Herman and Wallace Institute. And it can be really valuable. I think it's just important to understand how the muscles are working and have some good idea of how it works with your breath and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think so many people are so disconnected from their body, right? Like how many times do you feel like I don't feel anything down there, or I don't know if I'm doing a Kegel, or like, I just feel numb during sex. Like the role that especially yoga has in dropping back into the body, connecting, knowing what it feels like to move a little bit more this way or to breathe into a stretch. Like it's just all this body awareness stuff that we don't get a lot of.
I think in that sense, it can help a ton. I think tapping into just like what is happening is great. What I don't love is when people are like, I just like try and tighten the whole time. You know, like, again, it's that idea of like, I'm toning my vagina and I'm making it strong. And like, no, like it actually needs to move. And movement is like one of the best ways to help with pelvic floor function. It's just the awareness around it is important.
Love it. Okay. Last question is, does pelvic floor physical therapy cure incontinence, the kind that happens when you sneeze or cough? Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Does it cure it? A lot of times, yes. I think it does help significantly. Sometimes it goes away completely. Sometimes it gets much better. It depends on what is driving incontinence. There can be so many things that are driving it. So again, it's like understanding the whole body connection and understanding what other factors are involved. And yes, it's very effective.
Love it.
In most cases.
I had a lady come in. I want to switch to prolapse for our final bit. I had a lady come in and she had pain with deep penetration. And on exam, it was around her cervix. And a lot of people find that when the cervix is touched or knocked about during intercourse, it's quite uncomfortable. Some people find it arousing. There's a whole vagal nerve thing. But for the majority of people, that's not a sexually pleasurable experience. It's like things are going well, but ugh, my cervix feels like ugh. And my thought, and I wanted to know how much you see this, is she just has a little bit of apical prolapse. So the cervix is just a little bit lower than possibly what it was before, but doesn't have a lot of like distal and nothing sticking out of the vagina sort of prolapse. But just that cervix has kind of come down after a couple of babies. Have you seen that as a cause for pain with deep penetration? She hadn't had any other pelvic surgeries. Or how would you think about that problem?
So I think about it from a mobility perspective. So I think like the old thinking is that things are falling down or falling out. But really, I think there's a balance between stability and mobility with prolapse. So when you have intercourse, the cervix moves quite a bit up and down, right? And so if it's not moving, if there's any kind of restriction around there, which is possible for a variety of reasons, even without surgery, that can be painful. Like it's trying to move up and down and might not be. So a lot of times if that has happened where people have that deep penetration and it's kind of around the cervix and they do a lateral and superior mobility testing. And sometimes if it's not moving to one side, if we can address that, that pain can be a lot better. If it's not, if it's really just a sensitivity issue, like touching the cervix is just really sensitive, we can try doing desensitizing stuff. So like trying to get with them in control, like, can you touch the cervix in a way that's not painful? If that doesn't work, using something like an O-net, something where you put an O-net is something you put on the penis and you can stack these little rings and that just limits the depth of penetration a little bit so that they can still enjoy penetration and it's not hitting that painful spot. But as far as like prolapse goes, it really is like stability and mobility. So sometimes like like I said, movement and friction and in and out and legs apart and squatting, like it requires a lot of dynamic movement. And if there is any kind of restriction, even though we think of prolapse as being a laxity issue, there still needs to be movement. And there still can be like, if there's a hip issue on one side and there's some fascial restrictions over there, that can be restricting the cervix movement, as an example.
Yeah. When I do prolapse surgery, I always send people to post-surgery PT because I'm like, I always tell people, I can fix the bulge, but I haven't made you any stronger. I haven't fixed the reason you got prolapse in the first place, like all of that stuff, because I want them to have such a successful repair so that it doesn't come back.
Yeah. And like, I feel like prolapse, again, I think the perception by many is that it's a weak pelvic floor issue. And as you know, our pelvic floor muscles do not hold our organs in place. That is not their function. That is not their role. They provide dynamic support so that when there's pressure coming from above, our pelvic floor can respond and we can kind of regulate pressure so that we're not creating this environment that is kind of pushing maybe the organs around a little bit. There's also more newer research coming out is like this idea of biotensegrity and that our bodies are just made up of a web of connective tissue, our fascial tissue and our organs and everything kind of sit within that web. And so when there is prolapse can be considered in some cases, a tension, like a pushing or a pulling of this connective tissue. So when there's an imbalance on one side, it can be pulling down and we can work on actually mobilizing tissue up above. Like if there's a scar tissue, like a C-section scar, let's say, the bladder lives right there behind the pubic bone. If that C-section scar is really restricted and kind of giving a downward push, sometimes creating some space underneath that C-section scar can allow things to kind of come back up. So we're talking about, you know, when we talk about prolapse, we're talking about creating good mobility. There has to be mobility for movement and for your organs to kind of be in a position that's comfortable and where they want to be. And then you have to have good stability too. So there needs to be good dynamic support from your pelvic floor muscles. And then, as you know, sometimes there is like, if there's injury to ligaments, there's injury to connective tissue that can create some laxity and it can also create like an asymmetry in pulling. And so that's just important to consider.
Yeah. It's so good for people to hear because what I hear over and over is my bladder's falling out.
my bladder's falling out. And it's like, it's literally never the bladder's fault.
Yeah, it's never the bladder's fault.
And literally it's also never.
That concept of falling out, what I see is like that creates the tension, right? Like people are like, ooh, yeah. I need to squeeze. And then with tension, there's a pulling. Like think of where your pelvic floor muscles are. And then they're, you know, they do kind of do this, but like when there's a lot of tension there, I actually think it exacerbates symptoms. And when we can get those muscles to kind of relax and have a good range of motion and work more functionally, which means lengthening a lot of the time, some people are a lot less symptomatic.
Yeah. And what I'll see a lot, I think, especially like in the postpartum population, is like, I feel like something's falling out, but I don't actually see it. Like there isn't a surgical something falling out, right? Like I'll do an exam and there's nothing actually falling out of the vagina, but they have this incredible sense of their pelvic floor not feeling supported, right? Or they are like this kind of fear of like, it's just either it's more mobile and they're aware of it, or they just feel really a lack of support. But I don't see anything that I can be like surgically putting it back in. Can you talk about that group?
So that's interesting. I think there's the phenomenon of central sensitivity. So that happens a lot in persistent pain, right? If you're in pain a lot, your nervous system in your brain become very aware of a specific part of your body and it becomes more sensitive. Like the alarm bells are always going off. The same is true for prolapse. So when people feel that sense of pressure or they're aware that they might be having a prolapse, that central sensitivity, like it can build up, like your brain is just paying so much attention to that. And it is very fear-based because I think there's a lot of misinformation on the internet about prolapse. I think it feels like a life sentence that the only fix is surgery and only surgery when it's bad enough to get surgery and it's only going to get worse. So I think those are the messages that a lot of people find. And so there's a lot of fear. And when you can do a lot of education of like, actually we can decrease your symptoms a ton and we can teach you how to use your pelvic floor in a dynamic way that gives you support. And we can work on the fascial tissue so that things feel really balanced and you can do CrossFit and you can run, you know, in a lot of cases that I've seen it so many times. I've had a number of people who come in super symptomatic and they come in for their second visit and they're like, I have no idea, but I haven't felt my prolapse all week. Like, I don't know what happened. And I'm like, oh, it's just like, your brain is not worrying about it anymore. You know, like you're not paying attention to it. So it's that concept of central sensitivity. I think that can be really, really impactful.
Totally. And that's what I'll usually do. But I'll be like, go to PT because they can do things to help you not be aware of it. And it's really the awareness of it that I think ends up, you know, that's what they say about surgery, unless it's affecting your ability to poop or empty your bladder or something like that, of like, it's your bother, which is why we do surgery, right? And it's like, if you can see a PT and they can help you not be aware or bothered by it anymore, you don't need surgery. It's a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it really is. I mean, you really can do a lot and not have symptoms. Like, I mean, people will come in and say, I have symptoms all day. And then you get them running 10 miles. And they're like, no, I'm actually feeling really good. And I always tell people too, like, you might have days where you're symptomatic. Like, that's just part of it. You know, like our bodies are tired. Our bodies are different. Our hormones are different. So there might be days and that doesn't mean that it's getting worse. I think that's also important to know if you are someone who experiences prolapse, like just because you're symptomatic some days doesn't mean that you are worse. It's like that tissue, again, that biotensegrity, like that fascial tissue, that kind of suspends thing is very dynamic and it moves and like our organs move around it and things from above can press down. And there's a lot of movement that happens inside the pelvis. And so just kind of relieving people of that fear can be really, really helpful.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Any final thoughts on PT or prolapse or anything else you want our people to know?
Let's see. We didn't talk about pessaries, and that's kind of your realm a little bit, but I think pessaries can also be helpful in certain cases. And I took a course on prolapse recently on how PTs can help identify whether or not a pessary is going to be helpful or not in certain people. And so I think that we can aid in that position as well. Screening people and trying to decide if they are appropriate or if a pessary will fit and if it will be helpful. But it can certainly, for anybody who doesn't know what a pessary is, it's essentially a brace that you can insert vaginally and it supports the front and the back wall of your vagina, mostly the front wall, and it can help kind of keep things in a superior position. And that's something that can be helpful at the beginning of treatment while we're working on things, if people are really symptomatic, just to help them relax. Because having the ability to relax your pelvic floor when we're going through working on prolapse symptoms is essential. So sometimes if people really can't do that, I'm like, let's get you a pessary and see if we can relieve some of that pressure so that you can let your muscles relax a little bit.
Totally. Love it. Awesome. Tell people where they can find you.
So I'm on Instagram at ConnectNWPT and Facebook at the same tag, Connect Northwest Physical Therapy.
I'm so glad we got to meet up again and re-podcast like 2.5 years after we first did it.
Yeah, it's been awesome. Thank you for having me again.
Totally. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Bye.